Welcome to the Sinister Sisters podcast. I'm Lauren.
I'm Felicia.
We're best friends.
And we like spooky stuff. And I actually have stuff to recommend this week. Can you imagine?
Woo! I'm thrilled.
I finally watched anything.
Oh, wait, not anything the title. I was like, wait, what's anything?
Just anything in general. Before, I just was only watching like Grey's Anatomy.
Amazing. Well, what do you have to recommend?
Okay. Have you seen Beef?
Not yet, but I've heard I need to.
Okay. It's A24. It's got a hilarious soundtrack. It's thrilling. It's weird. The cast is amazing. Like, honestly, it's one of my favorite things I've seen in a long time in terms of like a TV show.
Wow. Yeah. I love it. How many episodes?
I think it's like 8. That's a guess. I'm not positive.
Oh, so it's like a real, yeah, it's like a real TV show, not like a limited series or something.
But the episodes are short. Like you could binge it in a day if you wanted to.
Oh, wow. Oh, I'm excited.
Yeah.
It's been offered to me, you know, on Netflix, and I keep being like, I don't know. But after that recommendation, I'll definitely check it out.
Yeah, definitely, definitely worth it. And I just, for some reason, I'm really like, the soundtrack is so weird. Like the song choices, I'm like, whoever did this really is very funny. But you'll see. I don't want to spoil it.
Oh, I love it. Amazing.
Yeah.
Do you have any others?
I'll save it.
Or you can save it.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, I also wanted to recommend, I saw Fall. Did you watch that when it came out?
No, what's that one?
It's about two girls like climbing this giant like structure.
Oh,
kind of in the middle of nowhere. Yes. I honestly thought I would hate it. That sounds bad, but like I was just like, oh, it's going to be like, what's that? Isn't it James Franco that's in that like cutting his arm off?
Yes, 72 Hours or whatever it is.
Yes. Yeah, like, yeah. I was just like, I don't know if this is going to really be for me. I'm not like a big, like one set, like just two people kind of movie. Mm-hmm. But it was so interesting and so stressful. Like, I was on the edge of my seat the whole time, like drenched in sweat.
Oh my gosh. Did you ever see that movie? Oh, geez. What is it called? When they're up on the ski lift?
Oh, no, I didn't. But now I think I know what you're talking about. What is that called?
Yeah, they're literally just stuck on a ski lift for the entire movie, but it's also thrilling. I can't remember what it's called right now.
I know. I can't remember.
Similar concept, I assume.
Yes. And this one, too, like there, I don't want to ruin anything either, but there is like some like, you know, horror adjacent or like spooky stuff, too.
Oh.
Yeah. So it was really interesting to me and just like, stressful and fun and definitely made me never want to climb anything, but I don't know that I've ever wanted to climb anything anyway.
That's funny. I don't think I recognize the actors in it, but is it on Netflix?
It's, where did we watch it? Maybe? I thought it had just come to a streaming because, it's on Stars, which we got Stars.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's what it was.
It's but okay. I need to re-download Stars anyway for, you know, the show.
Yellow Jackets.
No. Thank you.
I was like, is that Yellow Jackets?
Yeah.
Or is Yellow Jackets Showtime?
I was
going to
say
Showtime.
Something about bees.
I think Yellow Jackets is Showtime, though.
Oh, you're right.
You're going to be screwed if you try to get Stars.
You're right.
Now you're going to get Stars and Showtime.
Dang it. You're right. There's too many things.
I know, but I mean, Yellow Jackets this season is so good, and you have to watch it.
I cannot wait.
It's just beautiful.
Let me recommend one more thing, actually. I have quite a few things. So I'm only on episode 2, and I had started it previously, but I didn't give it enough time, and now I'm back in, and I love it. The new Interview with the Vampire series.
Oh,
It actually
I never watched it either.
Really, really good. Yeah, there's something about it that I just really like. And our friend Francesca, she was the one that kind of convinced me to give it another shot.
Aww.
And she convinced me by saying, hold on, I have to find this because it'll convince you too. Okay. So she had said, I don't know if you saw Interview with the Vampire on AMC. I don't know if you're a big fan of the movie or books. If you're a big fan of the movie or books, you may not love the show, but I love the show because it's reimagined by a fuck ton of theater kids, and the writer's room is all playwrights. Definitely horror, which apparently upset a lot of viewers, but it's very like campy and erotic and genuinely upsetting. And then she said next season is going to be set in this horror theater in the 1940s, kind of like Grand Guignol, which is actually what I'm covering today, so it does connect. And they cast all these British stage actors, and it's going to be gorgeous, theatrical, and disgusting. So, I mean, wow. if that wasn't going to entice me to watch something, I don't know what would.
Yeah, that's incredible. That's like a Felicia and Lauren directed review. Exactly. We got to watch.
Exactly. And I think you will like it. Like, the acting is really good. It's like, it's good.
Oh, I'm excited. Okay, I'll add that to the list. I definitely need a new TV show to start. So
yeah,
that's awesome. Amazing. I'm trying to think. I mean, I did see other things that are not as much horror related. Like, I actually really loved the new Mario movie. I'm not going to lie.
I believe.
It's very, like, that's another one where, like, in a different way. But the soundtrack is so nostalgic. Like, they, you know, have so many, like, Mario themes worked in that just, you know, it's great.
Yeah.
And Jack Black. Yes. And Jack Black playing Bowser is so freaking funny.
Yeah, I've heard.
It's really the best part. So I loved it. It was very fun. All right. Shall I jump in?
Yeah, let's go for it.
All right. So I am covering Dead Woman's Crossing today. So this is, you know, maybe on the outside, one of those like more stories we've told before, kind of like a, you know, regional ghostly area. This one is located in Custer County, Oklahoma. So it is different because there's like a very involved, mostly seemingly true backstory to like why this area is haunted. So I'm going to kind of tell the story of that to start. So on July 7th, back in 1905, a 29-year-old school teacher named Katie DeWitt James, I just realized a 29-year-old school teacher is very close to you, Felicia.
No.
So she boarded a train with her 14-month-old baby, whose name was Lulu Bell, and she was heading to visit her cousin. So she's our feminist icon. She had just filed for divorce from her abusive husband the previous day.
Amazing.
On her way. And so her father said goodbye to her at the train station. Like, I guess she must have called him on a phone at the train station, and he fully expected to hear from her when she arrived at her cousin's house. So weeks went by and there was no word from Katie to her father. So he decided to hire a detective whose name was Sam Bartell to find his daughter and his granddaughter, the baby. And so the detective found something upsetting. So rather than getting off the train to meet her cousin, Katie instead got off in Weatherford, which is very close to Custer County, or is kind of like part of Custer County. And so she got off at this station with a notorious prostitute whose name was Fanny Norton, which, like, what a good prostitute name.
So good, Fanny Norton.
So Fanny had befriended Katie at a stop like along the way and told her that there was a strange man asking questions at the station that Katie was heading towards. And so Katie got nervous and the prostitute kind of convinced her to get off the train. There's not like a lot of info on like why she went with her, really. She just got spooked and was like, okay, I'll get off early too. And so Fanny took Katie and the baby to her brother-in-law, whose name was William Moore, and there they spent the night. So Katie was planning to just catch a train the next day, and witnesses even saw, you know, Fanny take Katie and the baby from the train station. And then the next morning, witnesses saw Fanny take Katie and the baby for a ride near Deer Creek in the area. And they were gone for about 2 hours before Fanny returned without Katie or her daughter.
Uh-oh.
So the detective discovered that the buggy had, like, you know, the wagon they had been in,
yeah,
had disappeared into a field near the creek. And then after, you know, that length of time, it had come speeding back out with one wheel that was stained with blood. Super creepy. So Fanny had pulled up to a farmer's house, called the farmer's boy over, and gave him the baby, Lulu Bell, and she was wrapped in a bloody dress. So the detective found other bloody clothes in bushes near the farm, and he found bloodstains on the buggy when it was back in town. So pretty obviously there was foul play, right, of some kind. And so Fanny had rushed back to, I guess, to Clinton in the area, and she kind of like up and took her four children away and disappeared. So the detective finally tracked her down, and on July 29th, she was arrested in Shawnee in Oklahoma. And the authorities actually knew her from a previous shooting that had happened, where basically like the jury decided that she wasn't guilty and they acquitted her. But Fanny, you know, denied killing Katie, but she was visibly nervous. And it was never till, you know, till this day, it was never really confirmed whether she was lying or not. It's definitely like, I think most people just presume she was guilty because the, you know, the bloody clothes and giving the baby away and everything else.
I mean, it's pretty suspicious.
It's pretty suspicious. But she, right after she was questioned, she went to the bathroom and swallowed a heavy dose of poison, killing herself in one fell swoop.
Mm.
So the case was never really officially closed because she died before they got the official confession. But it's pretty much, you know, assumed that, that's what went down. So that was kind of where things were left off until the following August. So, you know, about a month later, it seems like, there was a man who was fishing with his son along Deer Creek, and he found a fully clothed skeleton under a wagon, a wooden wagon crossing.
Wow.
And, yep, so the skull lay 3 feet away with a bullet just behind the right ear, and there was a gun that was found nearby. I'm still just like, what was this detective doing if he didn't find all of this?
Yes.
But I don't really know what detectives were like in the early 1900s. Maybe he was like, all right, I found the murderer. We're good.
Yeah.
But her father identified Katie's body, and he, you know, the clothing was recognizable. She had like a hat, a comb in her hair, shoes, her gold wedding band, all things that he could identify. So she was left there, you know, after Fanny had killed her. So the coroner declared robbery as the motive, but it doesn't really make sense because they left the wedding ring. So there was plenty of speculation that like maybe her abusive husband had, you know, gotten into cahoots with this prostitute to have her killed, like maybe even paid this woman to kill Katie. But he, like the husband hadn't seemed very concerned that the baby was missing. Although he did have an alibi for that length of time, like provided by a friend. And he was like, apparently he was friends with like the local sheriff. So he never really got in trouble for it. He also like at some point had, you know, when people were like, you're responsible for killing her, he claimed that he was like an invalid and couldn't have the strength to kill his wife. There also was like an article written around that time where he, like, Martin, the husband, claimed that both Katie and Fanny had tried to kill him previously, which
what?
I'm just like, there's no record that Katie and Fanny knew each other, like before them meeting up on the train. So I don't know if that's like saying that they were friends in some way. Mm. And Fanny's like ex-husband also took his side and said like, yes, Fanny and Katie tried to kill Martin. Which I'm just like, well, I don't know. It's just a very bold claim for a public article, especially when she's dead. But
yeah, I feel like newspapers were pretty loosey-goosey back in the day.
Oh my God, yes. They're just printing everything. I mean, honestly, I guess it's like our internet, right? Like,
yeah, exactly. They couldn't fact check.
Yeah, they're just like posting, you know, whatever, writing whatever people want to talk about down.
Yeah.
So after Katie died, Martin moved to Dewey County with Lulu, so he did have the baby. And really sadly, Katie's father never saw his granddaughter again. So he received, you know, some kind of updates from – he actually had a sister who lived nearby that could still see Lulu, but apparently, like, the husband would never let the grandfather see the baby. But Martin told the baby that Katie was – that, like, her mom was still alive and, like, the clothes that the grandfather was sending were from her mom. And so this is also super sad. So the baby – in January 1913, when she was 8 years old, she died of spinal meningitis.
Oh,
so
God.
Super sad, but seemingly like she died believing that her mother was still alive, which also is kind of like sad, bittersweet. I don't know. So she never really knew what happened to her mom. And Martin did actually remarry at one point, and it's suspected that like he stayed in that same area for the rest of his life. So this is a wild part of the story.
I'm ready. Just,
I feel like we hear things like this all the time, but years later, a man who was a boy at the time that Katie was murdered came forward to the police and claimed that he saw a buggy with two women followed by two men on horseback the day that Katie was killed. Allegedly, this boy was forced at gunpoint to murder Katie. So he claims that they killed Katie for the $25 she was carrying. And he, this little boy, was tasked with also chopping her head off.
What?
Yes. So it's very weird to me because, again, they left the gold wedding ring. Like, I don't know if they just missed it in this version of the story. But it's like seemingly like nothing ever really came from this story. I mean, obviously, you know, I don't know if they would have charged him anyways, but he wasn't charged with anything. But yeah, just kind of a weird side story that I'm like, I don't know.
Do you think he was – do you think it's true or no?
I don't know. It seems like a little far-fetched to me that they would like go grab a boy and be like, you have to –
you have to behead this lady. I mean
yeah. Right? It feels like one of those stories where like people are just trying to like – I don't know if like get attention's the right word, but like
I think maybe it like tends to boil down to that, honestly.
Right? Or like some kind of weird like trauma. Like, I don't know. I don't know. It's just like whenever you hear like false confessions, I'm always like, how, you know, how did we get here that people can like imagine this whole story, even though none of it happened?
Or want to take the fall for something that they didn't even do. Like, what gets somebody to want to do that? It's definitely.
Yes. It's so weird. Yeah. Especially just so many years later. It's like nobody's even like asking questions about it anymore.
Yeah.
It's very weird. So the wooden crossing where Katie's body was found was torn down about 80 years later. But they did build this concrete bridge in its place. And that was quickly dubbed Dead Woman's Crossing. And that is due to sightings of Katie's ghost being very common in the 1980s. And honestly, still people claim that they see her ghost. So legend claims that her spirit roams kind of that whole area, the streets and banks near the creek. And they, you know, she often is calling out for her baby daughter. And other stories claim that if you stand beneath the bridge and if you, you know, listen very closely, you can hear the rattle of wagon wheels rolling above you, which I think is creepy.
That is creepy. So,
yes. So I found a couple different like personal accounts. There was a researcher in the area that was doing a school project, and she noticed that there was a blue light with no particular shape that was, you know, started or like appeared over the creek and then started coming towards her and her friend. And then I found a blog written online where this woman named Becky Ray, that like she wrote it, that she was in college and there was a legend that there was a cold spot in the river, actually, or in the creek, like you could stand in it where Katie was supposedly killed. And so she went with some friends to see if they could find the ghost. And she claims that she did very much feel a cold spot and that it was a very hot day and the river water was warm, but they all felt this one very distinct cold spot. Yeah,
wow. I don't know.
I'm always like, don't all rivers just have like a random cold spot?
I honestly don't know.
Maybe I'll look into the science behind cold spots at some point in my time. But people also report, you know, hearing cries and screams of a woman. Others have even reported seeing like her full figure wandering around the bridge. Everyone talks about, you know, her searching for her baby. People have reported, you know, sudden temperature drops in the area. And some people say that they've even seen shadow figures and ghosts reenacting the murder and actually seeing, you know, someone shoot her and then chop her head off. But really, really terrible. And people have heard the sounds of a struggle, people running, screams of pain, kind of all the normal paranormal things, I feel like.
Yeah.
But I thought it was just such a cool story that it's like we have so many of the facts of the murder. And, you know, it's – I feel like a lot of the time there are like – yeah, like Dead Woman's Crossing I feel like is – sounds like one of those, you know, local legends that you'd hear. Mm-hmm. But I love that it was like a, you know, there was a real story and real murder behind it.
Yeah, because you're totally right. Like a lot of those local legends, it'll just kind of be very general. And it's like, yeah, this is like more documented. So that's interesting.
Exactly. But that's it for Dead Woman's Crossing.
Yeah, that's great. It really is interesting. We talked about this before, I know. Just this idea of like female ghosts, and there's just such tropes of like the wailing woman or like the mother that's lost her child that seems to come up again and again. And like, that's just very sad, but it's fascinating that it just comes up across so many cultures.
Totally. You feel like there has to be some like, I don't know, original story or like some like truth behind the very first ones or something.
Yeah. Wow. Good job.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm going to do the Grand Guignol Theater, which I was scared I had already done because, like, as a theater teacher, I do teach this, so I couldn't remember. But it's the horror theater of Paris in the very late 1800s and early 1900s. Ooh. It's – Lauren, you're going to be thrilled by this. Okay.
I'm so excited.
Okay.
So ready.
We're in Paris in 1897. We're in a theater that used to be a church where the incense that they used in the church – is seeped into the walls. The church, like, architecture is, like, crumbling. It's very spooky in there already.
So excited and love that.
Yes. And it was founded by Oscar Metenier, I think is how you say it. That was my French accent. I'm sorry.
That was beautiful.
And what they did was produce very naturalistic horror plays. Mostly short plays, like little one acts, and they were designed to shock theater goers out of their seats. It's kind of like,
yes, our dream.
Our dream. Like the point was to make people flee from the theater in fear.
Incredible.
It's so good. So the performance styles of these, and I'm going to take you through some of the plays in a little bit, but just to kind of give you a sense. So they did these horror plays back to back with comedies. And so they called these hot and cold showers, which I thought was really funny.
Oh.
And they all represented like a very like dark worldview. They had very gory special effects. And the acting style was like melodrama. So like super over the top in terms of vocal, in terms of physicality, like very, very over the top.
I love it.
The plays were not typically supernatural. So the quote here is it represented the unmasked brutality of contemporary culture. So the idea was like, yeah, so nothing supernatural. So like the horrors that could come just of human beings. So one particular trope that came up again and again, probably just because of the time period and like advances in science at the time, was like the corruption of science and like the evil doctor trope really got started this time. And so they did. So some of the plays were based on stories that already existed, like Edgar Allan Poe. Some things were based on true stories, like true crime stories in the news.
Wow.
Yeah, and the themes
that's
in general.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's really fun. And then some of them were like very original. But the themes that kind of came up through them were like insanity was a big one, torture, revenge, dark stuff. And they did what comes up again, which I'm sure we've talked about in this podcast, with like The Exorcist and other movies where they try to, it's like PR stunts to get people to think that seeing the show is almost like a challenge to be won. So they would do these PR stunts where they'd have audience members like faint, and they'd have people in like doctor coats run out tending to audience members.
Wow, that's incredible.
So funny. The thing that the Grand Guignol, I think, is really like kind of important for in terms of what we see today, is they developed a lot of stage techniques to make horror as realistic as possible. So they had a million different types of fake blood used for different effects. They created retractable knives that would bleed on stage. They created all these prosthetics for burns and for wounds on stage. So like big advancements in special effects stuff, which is cool. And I'll take you through a couple of the most famous plays, and then I'll talk to some famous people. So here's some examples of some shows. A famous one is Les Laboratoires de Hallucinations, which is basically Laboratory of Hallucinations, by André Delorme. He's one of our, integrate these. So he's probably the most famous playwright of the Grand Guignol. He was known as the Prince of Terror. He was probably a little messed up and a little traumatized, but he was the child of a doctor and like really liked, no offense, Lauren, really liked like watching operations. and like really liked watching like the stuff like his parents like operate and like seeing all like the sickening stuff. Like he was like very into that as a kid. And his goal always was to make his audiences flee or faint, either one. So this play, basically, when a doctor finds his wife's lover in an operating room, he performs a graphic brain surgery, rendering the adulterer a hallucinating semi-zombie. Then, now insane, the lover hammers a chisel into the doctor's brain.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that's what I'm trying to say. Like, these are like, these plays were just like incredibly graphic and also not very long. So it's just like a lot. It's basically like practice in like special effects, gross out stuff on stage with like a little bit of plot. Like, it was much more about trying to figure out how to chisel into someone's brain realistically on stage than it was about like the characters.
Got it.
Another one by André Delorme is Un Crime dans une Mansion de Feu. I don't know. Probably said it wrong.
I think
this is a very famous one, though. And it's basically these two hags in an insane asylum where they have a new pretty young inmate that arrives and they're jealous of her. So they use scissors to blind her.
Oh, my God.
I know. And then one more, André Delorme, La Horrible Passion, which is about a nanny who strangles her children, the children in her care that she's babysitting.
These really are so intense.
They're so dark. They're so intense. I'll also mention, let me do one more. So one more, this is by someone else named Maurice Level, but this one's called Bessa dans la nuit. I don't speak French. And this one is about a young woman. So this young woman, she visits a man whose face that she horribly disfigured with acid, and he gets his revenge. So he murders her.
Whoa.
Yeah. So this girl's just cool. So there's also this woman named Paula Maxa. She is known as the original Scream Queen and known also as the most assassinated actress in history. So She learned how to die hundreds of different ways over the course of the Grand Gagnon and was murdered a different way every night, basically.
That's honestly incredible. Yeah, I want that reputation.
I know, right? And then just for a fun fact for you, so Gaston Leroux, who wrote Phantom of the Opera, he was a frequent patron of the Grand Gagnon and also a writer of their plays as well.
Amazing.
So he was very influenced by them into writing Phantom of the Opera. And then the kind of reason it came to an end, so the Grand Gagnon ended after World War II. And I think the main reason is that people were so exposed to the atrocities and real life horrors of war that they weren't as interested in viewing it as entertainment because of like what their country and their people were going through at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a quote by this guy, Charles Danon, who said about the closing, "Before the war, everyone felt that what was happening on stage was impossible. Now that we know that these things, and worse, are possible in reality." Or now we know, sorry. So it's kind of like it's not worth seeing anymore because we know that's not even the worst of it because now we've seen it.
Oof, yeah.
Another thing that kind of ended this was, you know, the talkies. So early 1930s film, particularly Universal horror films, it just kind of changed how people viewed their horror, I guess. But over their 63-year run, they produced over 1,200 plays. And
so impressive.
Oh, yeah. No, it's amazing. And we still see, like, the influence of their work today, like, thinking about any horror movie you've seen with a lot of gore, Texas Chainsaw, Sweeney Todd, all these things can kind of be traced back in terms of special effects, in terms of like shock value, gore, these things back to the Grand Gagnon of Paris. There are some pictures online that I'll post of some of the productions. Yes. And also particularly the posters for the shows are like very cool. But yeah, that's the Grand Gagnon. It's a fascinating time in our theatrical history and doesn't really exist anymore. But I think Laura and I gave it our best shot back in the day with our horror theater company.
We tried. And I still think there's a need for it. Like, I still think
I agree.
There's like an interesting thing. Have I talked to you about like there are so many, I feel like, things popping up over Dallas. We still have yet to do one that are like these like immersive horror cocktail parties.
Oh, no. Interesting, though. Sounds fun.
Yeah. And I'm like, I wonder if, yeah, we've had friends that have gone to it and had kind of mixed reviews. But it feels like everybody's trying to get back at that, like, sleep no more or, you know.
Sure. And, have you heard about this Grey House on Broadway?
Yes, we bought tickets for when we come in.
Excellent. Yeah,
June.
I need to get my ticket. Where are you going? Maybe I'll try to go.
Wait, you should just come with us. We'll
talk about it after.
In June.
I forgot we were recording. But yes, so that's a horror play that's coming to Broadway right now. So it's always part of our entertainment. It's always part of what our culture is interested in viewing. So it's interesting. But yeah, that's it. That's the Grand Gagnon.
Incredible. And now we're all your students, Felicia.
Yes.
Amazing. Well, thank you all for listening. And I should have said this earlier, but we are back in a schedule of doing, or maybe not back, we are now moving forward going to do episodes every other week. So sorry for the, you know, no notice on that. But both of us have just had crazy lives and
crazy lives.
To scale back a little.
Yeah, and we have like the next few months for us both are pretty wild. So I think this is going to be what's most sustainable, so we can keep bringing you episodes.
Exactly, exactly. Well, thank you all for listening.
We hope you have some sweet, sweet nightmares.
Bye.